Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. He is Lance Metal. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to involve yourself in the program that way. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. Hope your Thanksgiving was filled with friends, family, food, and football. Giants wish they could have given the fans a better result on Thursday night, obviously. An ugly end to a rough game for Big Blue. We'll talk about that. We have the weekend full of games you can discuss as well. But Lance, we haven't had a Big Blue Kickoff Live show since the Giants lost to the Redskins, so we should start there. And look, you can nitpick a bunch of different things in this game and go through some individual stats and, you know, all that jazz. I'm going to keep it real simple here. The Giants against the Washington Redskins, who are in the bottom third of the league in terms of defense, totaled 170 yards of offense. Eli Manning, if not for some garbage time yards in the last drive, 36
yards on that last drive,
would have thrown for fewer yards in a game than he's thrown for since 2007, the London game against the Miami Dolphins when he did not break the 100 mark. They had multiple drop passes. Eli was off the mark on a few key throws. And it's not like the offense didn't have opportunities either. The defense forced the Redskins to punt the bunch in this game, and the offense just was anemic, and they couldn't get anything going on Thursday night the entirety of the evening.
I would just add that they did not run the football as effectively as they had in their previous six games. Five of the last six, they ran for over the century mark. In this game, they only had just over 80 yards, so that was another factor.
24 for 84, 3.5 yards per carry.
Yardage per carry is not where it was in the previous weeks, but you're right. I mean, the offense across the board, you could point to so many different factors, and to me, the two mind-boggling numbers that I'll throw out there, John, you know, you threw out total yardage, 7 first downs in the game, just 1 in the second half. So the 6 came in the first half, and then you had 1 first down, and that didn't come until the last drive of the game, the last possession, if you want to word it that way. So that's a huge question mark. And then the second factor is 2 of 14 on third down. That's 14% for you mathematicians, which is pretty much, I would say, an all-time low. I can't even remember. I tried to look it up in my archives. I couldn't find the last time they were 14% in terms of their third down efficiency. And this is the one that doesn't make any sense to me, John, and you summed it up by saying there were opportunities. So of the 14 third downs, right, 7 downs are for 4 yards or less. You'd sign up for that. I think any NFL team would sign up for, you going against any defense, if you would have said half of your third down opportunities are for 4 yards or less, you would say, hey, you know what? We're putting ourselves in a great position.
Well, how they do on those third downs of 4 yards?
They converted
or less.
One of those 7.
That'll do it. In fact, and I went through it, you'll see it right here earlier today. I went through the game log, and I'm going to tell you what the Giants' third downs were, so you folks have an idea of what they were dealing with. 3rd and 4, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 20, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 14. Then they had a 3rd and 2, which they did convert, a 3rd and 2, which they failed on, a 3rd and 3 that they failed on, a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 2, which they failed on, 3rd and 1, which they failed on, 3rd and 3, which they failed on.
So there you go. Those short yardage situations.
And I want to throw one other thing out there, too, and this is something that's been a bugaboo, I think, for this team for multiple years now, especially going back to last season. I think one of the reasons why they're simply not scoring enough points, and, you know, I think the only team that scored fewer points in the last 2 years is the Cleveland Browns. That was in Art Stapleton's article over the weekend.
Which is not a surprise, by the way, but yeah.
Well, it's still not a good number.
No, it's not. I'm saying Cleveland is not a surprise that that's the lowest team. That's what I was indicating.
In this game, Lance, they had one pass completion of over 20 yards. And that pass completion, again, happened on the final drive when the Redskins were playing prevent defense to Tavares King.
Now, they had a 19-yarder to Roger Lewis, which was right on the border. They had a 3rd and 14.
Correct.
Which is one of the few third downs they actually converted.
That is one of the two they converted. That's correct. And then they also did not have a run over 10 yards other than one Shane Vereen 11-yard run, which I believe came on a 3rd and 20. So that's a give-up play,
too.
A
draw play where they were just trying
Absolutely.
To get more room for
or
the 3rd
and 15 or something like that.
Yeah.
So you basically had two plays, a 14-yard completion to Evan Engram and a 19-yard completion to Roger Lewis. Two plays that went for over 10 yards in the entire game and one for over 20 yards that only happened because the Redskins were playing prevent defense. You can't win games when you can't get the ball down the field just a little bit.
Yeah, well, you can't win games when you only have 170 total yards. You can't win games when your offense only produces 3 points. Your defense put up more points than your offense. So, I mean, all of those stats are telling factors as to why the game played out that way. And I'll take it a step further, John, because you mentioned the lack of big plays. Let's not forget this Redskins defense coming into Thursday's game, okay? Total defense, 24th in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Points per game allowed. They were giving up 27 points per game. Second to last in the National Football League. Their passing defense was 25th. Their rushing defense was 19th. And their red zone defense was 28th in the NFL. So those numbers across the board show the Redskins had struggled on defense leading up to that. And any of you who have paid attention to the Redskins, it's a big reason why, even though Kirk Cousins is having a career year, they're hovering around 500. They have not been able to close out games. They had a 15-point lead on the Saints that previous Sunday in the final few minutes. They blew that lead. They lost in overtime. So teams were able to move the football against this Redskins defense. And then you see the Giants struggles. It just is further an example of how this is a week-to-week league and how many times, John, can we break down in pre-games and BBK, all of the statistics we run through, right, and we try to indicate, well, this is a good opportunity for the Giants, it's going to be a tough opportunity for the Giants, and very rarely do games play out that way. It's because this is not a paper league. This is a league that varies week to week. That's why I always say it's defined by parity. What happens one week, it's going to be very difficult for that to be duplicated a few days later.
Hey, look, and we talk about some of the specific issues. Eli missed a few balls. That screen pass to Shane Vereen was a killer.
High pass.
I think it was third or fourth down when he threw it too low to Roger Lewis on the cross. I believe that was a third down play, if I recall. That was in the second half.
I think you're right.
On a drive the Giants were trying to extend. And look, in fairness, folks, the Giants were also playing with this hodgepodge of an offensive line that you could think. I mean, if I told you, Lance, that the Giants would be lining up against the Redskins on Thanksgiving night back in August with Chad Wheeler at right tackle and John Jalapio at right guard, you would have said, first of all, who's John Jalapio? That would have been the first thing you asked. And by the way, then you have Brett Jones at center. So you're looking at guys from center to right tackle that, if things went right, they wouldn't have played this year. So there are reasons for the issues. But at the same time, the Redskins were similarly banged up on the offensive line.
Well, I was going to bring that up. Correct.
Their center was banged up. Their center and right guard were both out for the year. Morgan Moses had to leave the game with an injury. Trent Williams, their left tackle, didn't play. So Brandon Scherff at one point was the only healthy starter on that offensive line they actually had in the game. And this brings to the Giants defense, who for the most part actually did a pretty good job in the game. But there are two things that I think annoyed me a little bit. One, the run defense in the second half fell apart.
Yeah.
And the Redskins finished with 31 carries for 122 yards, just 3.9 yards per carry. That's actually pretty good. But if you focus this in a little bit, Lance, in the first half, the Redskins had 7 rushes for 12 yards. So in the second half, they ran it 24 times for 110 yards. That's a very effective game, and Piron was a big part of that. And trust me, no one wanted to see Piron struggle more in this game than me. I don't hear from Paul Dottino all day long. But they did not stop the run in the second half. And then this is the one that really confounded me. Because we've seen teams when they're playing the Giants now, and they have all these injuries on offense. So what do? They focus on Evan Ingram. They say, we're not going to let Evan Ingram beat us. We're going to focus on Sterling Shepard. We're going to let Sterling Shepard beat us. When they're running out, Ryan Grant and Josh Doctson, and you're playing multiple tight ends all the time because you don't have the wide receivers to play, how do you let Jamison Crowder be as open as he was on a lot of these plays where you don't even know who's supposed to be covering the guy? That's a problem. It's all right if he catches some contested balls and makes some great plays. Okay, that's fine. How many times was he just wide open? That's a problem.
Wide open over the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Just like on the touchdown. But previously, he had caught a few passes over the middle. And it seems as if, because of the injuries to the linebacking core, that they're so banged up there, John, I think a lot of teams are saying to themselves, that may be an area that we want to attack. And that was well documented with Jamison Crowder. You threw out the rushing numbers in that first half. The 7 carries for 12 yards. Kirk Cousins was responsible for the longest run, which was a 7-yard scramble. So that just goes to show you, the Giants were solid in preventing the Redskins from having a balanced offense. And then the second half, as you pointed out, got away from them. There was one drive where they must have ran with Piron. I don't have the number. He must have ran, what, 5 or 6 consecutive times, John,
and
on that one drive.
And it was all the same runs.
And it was productive runs,
all
too.
All these teams have figured out how you attack the Giants' defense when you run the football. And do you know how you do it? You run away from Damon Snacks Harrison.
Which makes sense.
Because
yeah.
he is, and frankly, Dalvin Tomlinson too. Both those guys are so good inside. And you mentioned the Giants' injuries at linebacker. I think that has something to do with it. These teams are running these stretch plays off left tackle and right tackle, and they mostly were running it to the left at Olivier Vernon. When Vernon had to leave that game for a little bit with an injury, you had the backup in there, and Avery Moss got gashed a couple times on that side. Again, not sure if it's his fault, but they were running at him. I don't know what the actual responsibility and scheme was. And they just ran it and ran it and ran it. And it's got to be this long fourth quarter drive that they had.
I think that was the one.
Yeah,
they
so here we go.
Fed him.
Pirine left end for 6. Pirine up the middle for 1. Pirine up the middle for 11. Pirine left end negative 1. Pirine for 5. Pirine for 2. And there's a couple passes mixed in there, but they just ran again and again and again and again. It was that same type of stretch play. Oh, here it is. It's the end of the third quarter to start of the fourth. The Redskins got the ball back with 2:52 to play in the third quarter, Lance. Here's the series of plays. They start on their own 10-yard line. Pirine for 3, right end. Pirine left tackle 11. Pirine left end for 9. Pirine left end for 16. Brandon Marshall left end for 8. So that's left tackle or left end for 4 straight running plays. Then they went right end for 3, and then they had an incomplete pass. Pirine left tackle for 6, and then Kirk Cousins got sacked on a 3rd and 4. But you're right, that's like 7 of 8 plays running the ball. And then I mentioned the subsequent drive. So you're right, they just pounded it and pounded it and pounded it. And when this Giant defense can't create opportunities now for the offense, Lance, they have trouble scoring. Over the last 2 weeks, the Giants only have scored 9 points that have not been aided by the defense. You had the field goal in overtime against the Chiefs, and you have the first field goal of each game against the Redskins and against the Chiefs last week. So
because,
9 points.
No, I think that's an excellent point, John, because the Darkwood touchdown against Kansas City was set up off a turnover. So that gave them favorable field position, meaning what is the common theme here? When the Giants' offense has to put together a lengthy drive and go the length of the field, that's asking them to do too much. When the defense divides that in half, then it's a little bit more doable for the Giants. And that brings me to another big narrative from this last game, John. Field position. Starting field position. The Redskins had 13 possessions Thursday night. 7 of those possessions started at their own 33-yard line or better. Now, why was that? Because when the Giants constantly go 3 and out, deep in their own territory, you're putting Brad Wing in a precarious spot. And then all of a sudden, the Redskins get a 10-yard return, John. They're already near midfield. There was one play where Jamison Crowder returned at 14 yards. The Redskins started at midfield.
And you know what? Those are the 3 of those possessions, Lance, or 3 of the times the Redskins scored.
Bingo.
Their possession at the end of the second quarter, they gained the ball on the Giants' 48. That was probably the Crowder return
that
you're talking
that.
About.
Okay.
That turned into a Redskin field goal with only about 13 seconds to go on the clock. Second half, they got the ball at midfield. They scored a touchdown on that drive, a 6-play, 60-yard drive. There was a 10-yard penalty involved there, which is why it was a 60-yard drive from midfield. Then their other score came when they got the ball on their own 40-yard line. So all 3 of their scores came on possessions where they had started their drive at the 40-yard line or closer. So you're right.
But I would say that, see, a lot of people are going to point to, John, well, you know, the defense is not getting the job done. And there were some defensive issues in the game. There's no doubt about that. But the offense didn't do enough to aid and help out the defense in terms of the positioning of the field battle.
Hey, look, in the games past when people wanted to call up and blame the offense, I'm like, guys, look at the defense. This is if you want to point the finger for a game like this, this was much more on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. And it wasn't close. I think early in the year, considering the narrative heading into the season was about the Giants' offense and how it struggled, I think people sometimes pointed the finger there when it was unwarranted. Many games early on, the offense, you know, gave the team the lead late in the fourth quarter, and the defense couldn't hold it. But this was a week where the offense just couldn't muster anything. And you can't expect the defense to force a punt or get a takeaway or turnover every possession. You just can't.
Yeah, you can't expect it to be so opportunistic every single time. I mean, the fact that Jenkins made that play was great. Unfortunately, then Jenkins suffers the ankle injury, and then he was beat by Josh Doctson in the corner of the end zone because he wasn't 100% healthy.
That was a great throw, by the way.
It was a tremendous throw.
Oh, man, that was a good throw.
I mean, Cousins put it only where pretty much Doctson was able to get it. And, you know, we were talking about that play earlier. I thought the Cousins throw to Crowder was also impressive. Granted, there were some breakdowns, and Crowder had plenty of time.
The one for a touchdown, you mean?
Correct, but it was squeezed right in between.
Correct.
guys running to the right and left of the end zone, and Crowder found the slight opening, and Cousins put it right where he could catch it.
And he was on the move, too, when he threw that
Correct.
Ball,
too. Correct. He was rolling out of the pocket to buy time.
All right. Let's do phone calls, folks. 201-939-4513. That, everything else, we could go around the league, too, if you like. But let's go to the guy who called in first, and that's Joe in Pennsylvania. He joins us first up. What's up, Joe?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. I never thought I would say this, you know, I'd accept the loss. But, you know, with the Giants played hard this game. The last game I said that, too, after the 49ers, and I forget the game before that.
The Rams game.
Which team?
The Rams game. The Rams game you're referring to, yeah.
Where they didn't even show up. After that, I said, I don't even want to win when they play the Kansas City or any of the teams the rest of the way, just so they show up and play hard. They did play hard. But you could see the difference. You know, and you have to blame the offense there, definitely. And I think one player might have made the difference. And you know who it was in the offensive line that got hurt that wasn't there? He might have made the difference in all them first downs. You know who I'm talking
Fluker?
About? Fluker? Who?
Fluker?
Right. He could have made that difference. Because I don't even know if we had – to the very end of the game, did we have any first downs in the third quarter?
No, we only had one. The Giants only had one first down in the second half, and they got that first down, I think, on the last drive in the fourth quarter when Eli got the 36-yard pass.
The Giants only had
36 yards worth of
passes. Joe, the Giants had two possessions in the third quarter. The first one, they committed an illegal block above the waist, so that put them in a second and 18. They punted, and then they had a third and 8, and I believe Eli tried to find Evan Engram, and they couldn't convert that third and 8. So the Giants did not have a first down in the third quarter.
Right. And you know what I mean? Really, that I hate to say it, but that's putting the defense out to dry. They played good in the first half, defense. But, hey, you can only last so long. And it's not only that. It's psychological, too, I think, after a while. You know, it could be heartbreaking. So it just shows where we have to strengthen, and that's without a doubt. I said, whatever, the big guy, Fluker there, he could have made that difference just with that one player there if he would have showed up. I really would have liked to see what would have been the difference, because I think we would have got them first downs and ran the ball different and could have been a whole different game.
Yeah, but Joe, here's the thing. Even when Fluker was in there, the Giants have been one of the worst teams in all of football converting third and short this year. It isn't something new for this game. They've been bad on third and one the whole year.
It just seemed the last couple of games that they were much better.
That's fair.
So that's what I'm saying. Maybe catching on, that getting there and playing, you know, and catching on. And it just shows with this coming year, no matter what we do when we come to the draft, I want to say, you know, if we're up there real high and there's a quarterback, we have to take them, because, you know, look at what it cost you, you know, and you're not sure on the quarterback we have behind Eli.
Well, Joe, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And just remember, you say you have to pick a quarterback, but the caveat for me, I know Lance is even less in on this than I am, it has to be a guy that you believe in. You don't pick a quarterback for the sake of picking a quarterback. If you scout these guys and you believe somebody is a franchise guy, then by all means, go and make the pick. But what you don't want to do is go hunting and pecking for a franchise guy when you're not sold on it. Because picking the wrong quarterback hurts you just as much as finding the right quarterback can help you. That'll set you back 3 or 4 years trying to figure out if this guy can play or not. So you want to make sure, if you do have a high draft pick, if you're going to pick a quarterback, you have to be sold on him the same way you would be sold on a wide receiver or a running back or an offensive tackle or a defensive end. Whomever you're going to pick with that first pick, regardless of position, you have to be sold on that guy and really believe in it, because you don't want to pick the wrong quarterback. And we've seen what happened to franchises that have done that, a.k.a. the Cleveland Browns, and it hasn't turned out well.
Yeah, it's hard to recover. The other thing is, if there are players that are at other positions who you feel can impact year one immediately, that's the other thing that you need to weigh against a quarterback that, in all likelihood, is not going to be on the field for a few seasons.
Correct.
The other thing I wanted to add before we get back to the phones, the last caller was bringing up DJ Fluker. You know, don't overlook the fact that the Giants gave up 4 sacks in the game, which I thought was extremely costly because it put him in a lot of third and longs, and Fluker is not going to be dealing with Ryan Kerrigan, even if he plays, who had a field day in that game.
Yeah.
So that's something you got to take into consideration.
Tough matchup for Chad Wheeler.
Very tough.
Good learning experience. He, you know, Kerrigan is not really the fastest, quickest, turn-the-edge type of guy. He's more of a try-hard, you know,
He's relentless, though.
Relentless power type of pass rusher, and he had Chad Wheeler's hands full, and he frankly had Eric Flowers' hands full, too. Flowers struggled him a couple times.
They move him around.
Over the course of the game, too, and the Flowers sackless streak did end against that.
The
against
penalty-less streak also, by the way,
that's
ended,
true.
Too.
Did he commit two penalties in that game?
He committed just one penalty, okay. But I was looking over. He's gone a number of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, to be honest with you, I think the last time that Flowers picked up a penalty, and I'll bring it up here because I chart that, was I think maybe the same game in which he gave up his last sack.
Answer, the Lions game then?
Well, the Lions game was the last time he gave up a sack, but he gave up a penalty or he was charged. I stand corrected. It was the next game. The Eagles game was the last time that he had a penalty because that was Flowers' third penalty of the season. He now has four on the year.
He had two penalties
He had two penalties
Eagles,
in the Philly
yeah.
game. So that was all the way back in week three. He picked up his first penalty since week three. Thursday night against the Redskins. So I think it says a lot about the pass protection as well as the disciplined style of football that we've seen out of him over the last few weeks.
Stay in Pennsylvania and say what's up to Bob. How are you, Bob? Good to talk to you.
How are you guys doing? Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Bob. What's on your mind today?
I got a couple of things. I'd like to get both points out before I'm not on any longer. But
go ahead.
Okay. I just want to make two points. And just get them both out.
Then get to them, Bob. Let's go.
Have a video, so speaking of Thanksgiving, you have a video on there. You guys weren't around when LT ran that ball back on Thanksgiving Day in Detroit. But you've got that listed as being in 1992. There's no way it could have been in 92. It was probably 82.
It was 82.
Okay, it was a strike short.
Correct.
Year,
no, you're right. That was the last time the Giants won on Thanksgiving.
I was at my mother's house, I guess, and she's on the phone with somebody, and I'm over there, and I'm screaming, and she was yelling at me because I was making so much noise.
The Giants
anyway,
did play the Cowboys
like
in 92.
Correct,
like
they did play
I
the Cowboys
just remember that so vividly. And it was probably in my day where, okay, football was a different game than it is now. I believe it was better, and you didn't have it where it was so much all about the economics of it and things like that. But I still try, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to be so excited about 2018 because 2017 seemed to got canceled. It was strike shortened. And as long as no team from Pennsylvania wins the Super Bowl, we could start fresh next year. And brings
true.
Me to my second point that it has to get as bad as it can get, guys, because I have to be assured that we're going to have a new general manager and a new coach next year. I called a couple months ago, September and October, told you that this team was being lost. Everybody said I was nuts. That was a solid locker room and everything. But you could see from the Dallas game opening night that they were not selling out and hitting and tackling. And which brings me to my final thought of I'm going to back up my buddy Charlie. How about that?
Okay.
About
what?
Saying, I'm really going off on
this. Oh, you really are, I was going
to
say.
Let's go back to, I'll give you a Will Beatty example, okay? The Eagles signed Will Beatty in case they needed a left tackle to play. If I was general manager, I would have brought Will Beatty in right now, and then you could see if Eric Flowers could possibly be a right tackle. Look, you got to be looking ahead to next year. And as far as I'm concerned, you're going to have to see if Davis Webb has got anything. And
that
again,
one's fair.
You don't reach for the quarterback, but hey, let's get that number three pick. Jeez, we don't want to win any more games. I was at that game last week against Kansas City. It was kind of bittersweet that they won it. And that's just the situation I think we're in.
All right, Bob. Thank you for the call.
The
we appreciate
call,
it.
You know, first of all, it's not so much where you select. I understand maybe when you want to talk about quarterback, it's important. It's what you do with the pick.
I know. But
that
obviously,
can't be dismissed.
The earlier pick, the
no,
more choices
you have. No, well, I was
going
to say, of course. I mean, if you're in the top three, I get it. But, I mean, if you're in the top five, I still think you're going to walk away with a solid player.
As long as you do the right thing, obviously.
Correct. And that is all going to be something that we're not going to know about until we see the positioning of the teams and the options of the players because stocks they raise and lower once the college season ends and we see, you know, how their workouts go. As far as, you know, some of the other issues in terms of the offensive line that he raised, I think it's far more valuable to continue to evaluate Ereck Flowers at the left tackle position to determine whether or not they want him at the left tackle position than bringing in Will Beattie, John, as a rental player and thinking that that's going to help you determine what you want to do moving forward. I think it makes much more sense to keep Flowers at left tackle to determine, hey, now that we have a bigger sample size, do we like what we've seen out of him, or do we want to go in a different direction?
And if you want to move him next year in the offseason, and again, I'm not saying the Giants should, but you know, if you decide that you want to move him over to right tackle, which is fine, that's your prerogative. If you know, in your, you know, in the universe where you're running the team, okay, but you have a whole offseason to do that. I think Flowers has done well enough at left tackle over the past 6-7 games where he's warranted a look the rest of the year to give him a chance to keep the job. Now, if over the last 5 games he, you know, starts to falter and committing penalties and giving up sacks and things like that, you can have a conversation about it. But I think, like you, I'd rather see how he does at left tackle. He does have some real challenges. Yeah, he's, you know, I'm not going to say he's gone through a quote-unquote soft stretch of the schedule, but, you know, the Chiefs don't necessarily have a great pass rusher on that side, because Houston rushes
Houston
off
was on
the left
opposite sides with Wheeler.
The Niners don't really have a great pass rusher. The Redskins, when they put Kerrigan over there, but otherwise Preston Smith isn't exactly a world beater at right end. Since the bye, and you know, Robert Quinn's good, but he's not elite. Coming up though, you're going to have Khalil Mack. You're going to have DeMarcus Lawrence when he's over there on that side for the Cowboys, though he is on the left more than he's on the right. The Eagles, obviously, you know, they have a number of guys that they throw out there. Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, go through it. Arizona has a very, very good defensive front, and then you have Washington again with Kerrigan. So I think it'll be a good evaluation tool the rest of this season.
But at the same time, remember, I mean, we focus so much on pass protection. You also want to evaluate him as a run blocker.
Correct.
You want to evaluate the penalties, as we just talked about. Is he playing well-disciplined football? Are you avoiding the false starts? Are you avoiding the holds? All of those things have to be taken into consideration. You don't just evaluate an offensive lineman. I know we get enamored by sack totals, but it's far more than just how many sacks a player is giving up to determine how they're performing on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's hurries, pressures, penalties, and run blocking, like you mentioned, too, is something as well. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone calls and say hello to Steve in Washington, D.C. Hi, Steve. How are you, buddy?
What's going on?
Happy Thanksgiving, man. Happy Thanksgiving. Everything's great.
Well, listen, guys. This is the first year I did not take my son to the game. I actually went for just a couple quarters. You know, I gave my tickets away to family members, and I did go just for a minute. But anyway, that's not why I'm calling, obviously, you know. But it's been that kind of a season.
Yep, understood.
I didn't want to go to the game. But let me just, because I just really couldn't, you know, I'm actually hoping for draft picks. I was torn. I couldn't really be there faking it. But anyway, listen, guys. All right, this is what I'm going back to 2015, because I just really feel like this is basically when we dropped the ball and brought this man in that we call Ben McAdoo.
Well, that's his name. You don't call him that.
Well, he was brought in 14, remember.
Listen, guys. Okay, listen. If you go back to 2015, even when we, you know, he won this job, when he came in and looked like he fixed Eli, when really we just got Odell Beckham Jr. and we slapped him in a West Coast offense, which I don't think plays towards Eli's strength, and which is a big part of the problem too, because I really feel like, you know, we should do more play action, and he doesn't really do well with the short ball. Just throw the long ball is his strength. And, you know, before I go on a tirade, because I can really do that right now, you know, I want you guys to look at a couple things.
Sure.
Number one, we already know we're completely impotent. The offense is impotent without Odell Beckham Jr. in there. And even when we win the games, even when we win, the biggest problem why I know we're not going to win with this offense is because we're not winning the time of possession. That's it. You can't win championships without winning the time of possession. I mean, I just, you know, it's either throw a slant and hope Odell takes it 70 yards or you're throwing underneath the sticks. That is so disgusting. I can't watch that. Every fan is cringing every time we do 3rd and 7 and you're throwing a 5-yard pass. I mean, that. What is that? That's not Giant football. Just run the ball if you're going to do that. Just run it. You know,
Yeah, but well,
I want you guys,
Steve
listen,
is fired up.
I'm going to breathe for a minute, and I'm going to let you guys comment. But I want you guys to look at something, because this to me, this is a profound stat that I really don't know what the stat is, but I guarantee you it's going to be profound. When you look at our team, the offense, the last 3 years, and you see how few of pass interference calls we have going for our offense, that in itself should tell you something. Number one, we're not pushing the ball down the field enough, but – What does that tell you guys? I'm gonna listen for a second, then I'll get back. What does that tell you guys about our offense if we never have any pass interference calls?
Lance, you go first on the first point you want to make.
Well, I was just going to say that, I mean, time of possession to me is connected with the running game.
Correct.
Which clearly I understand, but they've been
and also,
running
by the
way,
football
this season.
Third down efficiency, too, sustaining drives is a big part
Huge part of that.
Yeah.
But I guess what I was going to bring up is the fact that you can't argue that they haven't had enough at-bats this season. They have been running the football. The results have been mixed, I'll give you that, especially against the Redskins.
They've been improved, but they're not where you want them to be yet.
There's always strides that you want to make, but in previous seasons, I think you could have maybe pointed to, you know what, maybe they abandoned the run too early, maybe they should have shown more balance. This season, Dark was walked away with a few games where he's had 20 carries.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they've been feeding him. The problem is the way game flow plays out and you're down late in games and you're trailing by a touchdown or two, you're not going to be running the football for the majority of the fourth quarter.
And then, Steve, on your pass interference point, Steve, I don't know where the Giants would rank in that category. In fact, I'm not even sure how I would look that up. I'll see if I can find that this afternoon, and I'll tweet it to you. I think what you said is probably accurate, that probably speaks to the fact that they're not pushing the ball down the field as much, where you get a lot of the pass interference penalties. That would be my guess. And I think the other part of it, too, might be other than Odell Beckham Jr., is there somebody that the defense feels like they get put into a bad position where they have to interfere with them? You know what I mean? Usually these guys commit these pass interference penalties when they get beat, and they feel like in order to keep up with the offensive player, they have to commit those types of penalties. And I think you make a decent point with Odell Beckham not out there, and frankly Sterling Shepard not out there for a lot of this year, or Brandon Marshall. Is there somebody the defense feels like, oh, in order to stay with this guy, I need to get really handsy, I need to be really physical? And I think that's where you get some of those penalties.
That fear factor.
Five or seven yard pass route, so nobody cares about, you know, hands on anybody.
No, you're right about that. Sure.
7 yards.
Absolutely.
The receiver's just waiting for the defender to come crashing down on their back, basically, once they turn around and wait on the ball. But, you know, I just don't really feel like – listen, I think, you know, in Eli's, you know, latter years, it's good to have, you know, have someone a little bit less, but that's not towards his strength. He doesn't do well with the short ball, and he doesn't do well throwing on the run. He's a play-action quarterback. That's where he really hurts you. And we're not, you know, we're not making that adjustment. But I just wanted to say this about the defense, because I feel like, you know, you can go all the way back to 2015. Yeah, we've made a lot of upgrades, you know, the last couple of years. That last year they panned out, but this year they didn't. But I tell you what, it's clear we have the talent, but the problem is this. When they're on the field all day long, they're going to get discouraged. That's why they played well in the first half. This last game, I knew they were going to come out and fight. But who can put, you know, when you're off back on the field, right, you know, as soon as you come off, and, you know, they have no confidence in the offense, and neither do I. So, hey, guys, that's pretty much all I got to say.
Thank you, Steve.
I don't believe in this offense, so, you know, I just hope this experiment is over sooner rather than later. I appreciate you taking my call. You guys are. Have a great show. Thanks a lot.
All right, Steve.
Hope you had a great Thanksgiving with the family, Steve.
Play action offense is all contingent on the running game, which gets back to what we started off.
Yes.
So, I mean, I get Steve's point, but remember, you've got to get the defense to buy into the run, and then that's going to open up opportunities for play action. So I think you have to take that into consideration, and I'm really focusing on the last game where the Giants did not run the ball as effectively as they did in the previous game, so it's hard to have the play action play off of that because the Redskins are not putting a lot of stock in the Giants' run game.
And you used the term fear factor a moment ago. I'll use it again. If you don't fear the run, guess what? Play action's not going to be as effective.
Bingo. Yeah.
201-939-4513. Charlie, I'm not going to you yet.
Good.
But I think that I just
nobody's
laughed.
Complaining.
He is on the caller screen, the topic. Charlie from Maine heard his name and wants in.
What else is there? Of course. Well, you know why? It gives him something to maybe not have to talk about the offensive line, so his ears are burning.
By the way, I think we need to start getting very serious. And well, I'll bring this up when Charlie comes on later. Let's go to Dean in Connecticut. Dean, what's going on?
Now you have me intrigued.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great, Dean. How are you, buddy?
John, the man with the many doppelgangers, huh?
Yeah, somebody put up on Twitter a picture of Evan McMullen, and he thinks that I look very much like Evan McMullen. All us handsome bald guys look alike, Dean. What can I tell you?
Or
ugly bald guys, depending on if your wife, depending if you're my wife or not.
On what direction you want to
exactly.
take that.
Yeah.
Well, it's good we got a chuckle out of a 2-9 season, so I'm going to try to be as brief as possible, but, you know, I'm sure I'm going to see a more animated Steve later on this afternoon on the podcast. But what you were just touching on about the play-action pass, okay? From what I see, if you do not have an established running game, the play-action pass really isn't going to be in your favor, because if you're not efficiently running the ball, the defense knows you're going to pass.
Yeah, Dean, by the way, play action works best when you're in like a 2nd and 4, because then a team will oh, you know, they might run for the first down here on 2nd and 4, and then all of a sudden play action's a lot more effective. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, if you have no running game, they're not really going to be expecting the play action pass. But, I mean there's so much to say. I mean, we definitely need a running back. And I will be for one admit that I have never been a big Ereck Flowers fan. How long has it been since he, how many consecutive snaps, and how long has it been since he's given up a sack? Doesn't he have some, like, long streaking record? Or?
Well, it just ended because that happened on Thursday night. Yeah.
But, I mean, he's showing improvement. And what really stuck out to me in this game is, even though I know he's out for the year, Janoris Jenkins played one hell of a game. He was all over the place, and there was no quit in Jack Rabbit
game. He played really hard, Dean. He played really hard in that game. I agree with you.
And I saw a lot of heart out of a lot of the players. And people talking about, let's just tank and get a good draft pick. You know, and if I put myself in an NFL player's shoes, okay, I'm getting paid money. This is the sport I love. This is what I love to do. As a competitor, do you really go out there and not give it your all? I mean, there's some sort of pride has to take into effect at some point. And I just can't see a team going out there.
Well, Dean, listen, I don't mean to cut you off. Forget pride. If you're Avery Moss, okay, and I could go up and down the roster, who are you to be in a position to say, you know what, that season's over. There's 5 games left. You're a rookie. Everything you put on film is part of your evaluation for when you're up for your next contract, whether it be with the Giants or free agency.
Or earning playing time next
correct.
Year.
Correct. So, I mean, every time, and I understand it's a nice media-driven narrative, fans like to buy it, players quit. Players can't afford to quit when they are young and they are just starting out their careers, and even veterans who are young and are thinking about their next contract. Where does quitting even fit into that equation?
Now, some players might do it anyway, and then those guys are the ones
and
that
they're not
fail.
Going to be in the league
exactly.
anymore.
Exactly.
Period.
Correct. Yes. Those guys get weeded out pretty quick in this league. Absolutely.
Yeah, like Owamabe Adigizua. I mean, I thought he had a lot of promise, but his heart just wasn't there. And, you know, sometimes
injuries
that
too.
Happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you take it with a grain of salt.
Could have went 00. I don't think he needed to stress yourself out too much. I'm impressed he went for the first name.
And by the way, he didn't shorten the first name.
No,
to
he
O
didn't.
Either. That
he
was
could
very
have said
impressive.
Oh, I know. Dean, you get brownie points. I would have went 00, but hey, whatever rocks your boat.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right, just 2 more quick things.
Yes, real quick.
One thing that I've been pondering lately is, okay, they took Davis Webb in the 3rd round next year. They're kind of doing the grooming thing with Eli. So what's to say the Giants do get a top 5, 4, 3 draft pick and they go out and take a quarterback? Is that the organization showing that they made a mistake and wasting a 3rd-round pick on Webb?
No. No, well, Dean, what that is,
that
is the organization just doing everything they can to make sure they have the best possible chance for replacing your franchise quarterback at the most important position on the football field. Webb will still be here. He'll compete with whoever the new guy is, and they'll move on from there.
Because I remember when they took Nassib, there was all the talk about, we'll just let him play in the preseason and get trade stock value for him. And what happened there?
Not from these two guys.
He didn't even get a grain of salt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you, Dean.
So, all right, one last thing.
Yeah, real quick.
Before Charlie comes on, if I hear the name Will Beatty, I am never going to listen to this show again.
Well, you could blame Charlie. You could blame the guy that you're introducing. To that point.
Thank
you,
Dean.
Blame Charlie
appreciate
for that.
The call.
Thanks for weighing in, Dean.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
Gets way too much attention on this program. I just want to throw that out there.
I am happy.
I think you're jealous.
Oh, I'm not jealous. I'm just saying. I think it's well done.
Charlie, I've been patient. I really have been. But it's
that makes one of us.
It is past Thanksgiving. We're almost in December, and I don't think Jeff Fiegels has seen his lobsters yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He hasn't asked me for them.
Wait a minute. What has he got to ask?
Hold on a second. The onus is on you, Charlie, as the loser of the Pepe Le Pew bet, that you have to get Jeff Fiegels his lobsters.
Correct.
When he said, when I want it, when everybody's home, and he said, I'll let you know when that happens.
Well, they were home. Well,
Charlie,
home.
Let me tell you, Charlie, after Jeff Fiegels had to endure a very disappointing Miami loss to Pittsburgh,
yeah,
he would have liked nothing more than for some fresh Maine lobster really feel better.
Give me a tweet, and they'll be coming.
Okay, Fiegels will.
Give me a tweet? We're telling you right now.
Charlie, here's the thing.
Them.
Fiegels is on with me on Friday. I expect you to call in, and we're going to settle this, okay?
I will. All right. I'll call in. Hey, I've just been waiting on him.
He's got to give you the green light now. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm just waiting. Hey, I got to give a shout-out to Bob in Pennsylvania.
Oh, God.
And the Shakedown crew, Steve and the gang. But, hey, let me say this. Eric Flowers actually...
Wait, hold on. Hold on a minute. What about Dean? Dean also brought you up.
And Dean.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay, there you go. I mean, you're going to give two guys credit. You might as well give them the trio.
John, what you got to do is give Lance the intro... My intro for his ringtone on his phone.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I need. Yeah, because I need to be reminded of you when I'm not here. Yes.
That's funny.
Brilliant.
I think that's a great idea.
Hey, I love it when you play it. The only reason I love it when you play it, John, is because Lance just squirms.
I know. It's
no,
great.
Because John's the only one that plays it. When I'm in that chair, notice I never play it. It's just Charlie from Maine is on the line. Let's move on. I'm glad that you
played it. Damn right I'm playing
it. So you can play it. He's the only one, notice, that plays it on this program.
No, Jeff played it once. Jeff played it once.
Oh, did
well,
he
Jeff
really?
Had to reach over me to play
no,
it, if
did
you
he
remember.
Really?
Yes, he did. I actually remember that. Jeff reached over me to play
oh,
it, Charlie.
That's great.
You're not providing all the details. That's
great.
What happened.
I love it.
Yes.
Hey, about Eric Flowers, how about the great new improved Eric Flowers?
He had a rough game.
He actually had three penalties, but two of them wasn't.
One was declined. You're right. One was declined. That's fair.
And Gillette, who was a linebacker, speed guy, went right past him about twice.
Yes, he did. That's
Eric
fair.
Eric Flowers has not improved. He's gone from crap to maybe awful, but... That's my opinion, anyway.
Okay, Charlie, hold on. First of all, and I'm not saying this. I quote you: if he went from crap to awful, that actually is an improvement, isn't it?
Why are you even helping?
Yeah, it is.
You're legitimizing his point.
No, I'm not saying I agree with this point.
I know.
And Charlie, you can't argue Eric Flowers has played better the last 6 or 7 weeks than you've ever seen him play during his career.
And Charlie, I'll let you continue. And you brought up the same point. I think it was last week's program, and that's all we're bringing up. That there has been progress and improvement.
Yes.
Nobody's saying he's going to the Pro Bowl. Nobody's saying he's going to Canton. It's just you have to at least realize from week two when they went up against the Lions till the Redskins game, there was a little bit more consistency.
And look, we're not even saying we know for sure that he's going to be a starting left tackle for the next 5 or 6 years.
Because the evaluation process.
All we're saying is that we've liked what we've seen over the past 6 or 7 weeks. That's all we're saying.
No, I agree. I just think when we get a new coach and a new GM, they're going to have fresh eyes. They're not going to be he's not going to be the golden boy. They're going to look at him as what he is. So then we're going to find out if this guy can actually play, or he's going to be on the right side, or he's going to be on the bench.
Yes,
but,
we will.
It's kind of hard to do that when you picked him number one and you've never given the guy any competition, and that's been a big issue for me.
Well, Charlie, honestly, at this point, it doesn't matter when and where Eric Flowers was taken. It's just a matter of figuring out how he's going to help the football team best over the next couple of seasons.
Well, and in fairness, Charlie, you know, there would have been some competition if your boy didn't tear his pectoral muscle when Eric Flowers was drafted. Remember, let's consider the facts,
and
though.
And then, by the way, chose to have shoulder surgery instead of trying to fight through the
injury because he would have been available and eligible to come off of it. So, you know, that's what we forget about. And this is not to build an excuse, but the facts are Flowers is drafted. Flowers, the plan is most likely to start off on the right side, John.
Correct. That was the
then
plan.
What happens? In the offseason, Will Beatty, while lifting weights, tears his pectoral muscle. He's out that entire offseason when he would have been competing with Eric Flowers, and Flowers, by default, gets the left tackle job.
Well,
that's
you know
how it played out,
GM
though.
Would have done? they would have gone out and got a veteran left tackle to take Beattie's place.
Don't go down this road, Lance.
No, listen, I'm not disagreeing with the points here. I'm just saying that those were the facts, though. And if Charlie's going to go down that road, at least let's get the facts out. That's all.
Do you have a second non-Eric Flowers point, Charlie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you brought up my boy, number 65.
I did. I'm guilty of doing that. I am fully guilty of
and
doing that.
And by the way, we just
I'm
lost.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
And we just lost Dean as a listener
correct,
because of you.
It was
Thank
me.
You.
You're right. Listen, I'm taking full responsibility on this program. I did
all
it.
All I'm saying is he's going to be holding up the Lombardi Trophy. And that's going to be poetic justice, him holding up the trophy and McAdoo and Reese being fired.
And Charlie, let me say this. Nothing would be more fitting than to see Will Beattie hold up the trophy in street clothes because he's not active for the game because they either don't think he's good enough or because he's injured.
He will be active.
No, but Charlie will say
and
that he's the best-looking offensive lineman in street clothes by far.
Should be active.
And that's going to be it. And the game, hopefully they can beat Dallas because I hate them. But other than that, I hope they go 3-13, and then we can start over and do things right. And hopefully the new people coming in will realize that Eli's still got 2 years left or three and build a team around him, especially an offensive line that can protect him and can run the ball. So
thank you, Charlie.
That's all I got, guys.
Appreciate
it. All right, Charlie.
By the way, it's funny, and I'm actually going to jump on board the Lance train on this, and I'm still going to get excited for the schedule release because it affects my life with travel, so I'll get into it. But never more this year has your point been proven out, Lance, and God, I hate saying this because
wow,
it's going to make you really cocky.
This.
But what? You have no idea how tough a team's schedule is every year when you get the schedule in April. You have no idea. Just look at the AFC West and the NFC East, and that accounts for 10 of the Giants' 16 games, okay? The NFC West, I think, played out somewhat how we would have thought, except for the fact that the Rams are a lot better than what we thought they were going to be.
Fair.
But the Seahawks are at the top, the Niners
Seahawks
at the bottom.
Still a challenging team, correct, yeah.
We expect
and
that.
And the Cardinals right in the middle
but
of the pack.
But if you take a look at the AFC West, who would have thought the Raiders would have been – I think people thought the Raiders would take a step back, and I think that made sense based on, you know, the turnover ratio and point differential and things like that. But no one would have thought they'd be where they are. Now, who knows who's going to be suspended for this week, by the way. Cooper
Crabtree
had a suspension. Crabtree got, you know, punching people in the face who was wearing a helmet, dummy, but he did. Who knows who's going to be there this week, but who would have thought they'd be that bad? The Chiefs would have fallen back the way they have, especially the defense taking a big step back. The Chargers.
And the offense
who, by the
taking
way,
a huge step back.
By the way,
the Chiefs.
My Chargers sleeper team prediction. I'm really
They're
rooting hard
good.
For them to win the NFC,
yeah.
AFC West. Who would have thought that? And the Broncos, that they would have been as bad as they've been this year. I mean, they've been legitimately pretty poor. You thought they would at least be around 500. And then the NFC East has flopped. The Giants and Cowboys were really good last year. They're at the bottom. And then the Eagles are at the top. So these things change year to year so much.
Well, because you can't predict injuries, as I always say, and you just don't know how seasons are going to play out.
And it depends when you play a team. Look,
of course,
for example,
timing is everything.
The Cowboys played the Packers in Week 4. People talking about the Packers going to the Super Bowl. Then Aaron Rodgers gets hurt the next week, and all of a sudden there are people picking against them in knockout pools all over the place. So it depends when you play teams during the year, too. You know, you played the Broncos the first 2 or 3 games. They're playing really well. Much different than playing them now when they're playing like garbage.
Of course. Same thing with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to play Kansas City the first 5 games of
Absolutely.
The season. Now you're saying, sure, bring on Kansas City. Can't score.
Opposite with San Diego. They started
Chargers
the season
or LA
0-4.
0-4.
0-4, and now all of a sudden they're winning like crazy.
Well, and the crazy part about it is, it's funny you brought up the Chargers, the last team, if I'm correct, because I know we were talking about this when they were playing the Giants, the last team that started a season 0-4 and made the playoffs is the Chargers in 1992.
And they might do it again.
They very well might do it. I mean, how can you pick against them? They're playing the best football in the division right now.
It's crazy.
That's how things all of a sudden go from the bottom to the top just like that.
All right, folks, we got 10 minutes. I got 4 calls. I'm going to get all you in. We'll go a little bit past 1 to 102. So you each have 3 minutes a call. Marco in Connecticut leads us off. What's up, Marco?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Marco. What's up?
All right. I'm moving on this. I want to get to the offensive line, but people calling up talking like, the guys that aren't going to be here next year, talking about specifically about the GM and the coach. What I keep coming back to, and this ties into Davis Webb, you know, Davis Webb, for him to play, right, there's got to be a specific narrative that gets thrown out to the fans, to the media, of why he's dressing, because it's going to get asked. Obviously,
you mean why
know.
He's not dressing?
And
you're talking about.
And he might not dress. And for anyone to call, just like your last caller, to say, well, the guys who aren't going to be here next year. Well, do you think Ben McAdoo doesn't want to coach this team next year? Do you think Jerry Reese doesn't want to be the GM? So why would they just stop coaching and just, you know, and have these games lost?
And, Marco, by the way, and I'll say this too, what happens in the final five games matters. It matters.
Absolutely.
I mean, if they somehow win five straight here, does anybody think that everyone's going to magically lose their jobs? I'd be hard-pressed to think that if this team finishes 7-9, that's going to happen. You know what I mean?
100%. Now, my question, guys, is about the offensive line, Pugh and Richburg. Why do you guys think we didn't hear about any offer that was extended, or maybe why one of those two guys wasn't extended throughout this season?
The Giants never released stuff on contract negotiations for one, so I could tell you that's why it didn't come from the Giants side. I think Pugh mentioned at some point that there was some negotiation at some point over the offseason for an extension. But look, here's the thing. Deals get done in advance when both sides are willing to agree on a simple point, where we'll pay you early, but you have to take less. And that's how it works in the NFL. Injuries are so prevalent that if you're going to get an early contract, it mitigates your risk as a player. So in exchange for mitigating that risk, you take a little less money. I think what a lot of players want, they're like, oh, no, I want to get paid now, but I want to get paid at the top of my position. It doesn't work that way.
Both ways,
if you want the security of getting paid early, you get paid less. And I think a good example of that, Marco, if you look at Major League Baseball and you see these young players who – you know, it takes a baseball player 5 years before they have a chance to hit free agency, maybe even six. They have
arbitration
and all that stuff.
And
you have see these players get long-term deals after they're only in the league for two seasons, and it'll cover maybe their first 2 years of free agency, but it's only at like half of what their market rate would be if they're unrestricted, because they're getting guaranteed money earlier in their career when they wouldn't have that money. Based on the fact that they're young, and like Lance said, it takes so long for them to
become
a free agent.
That's what it is.
So you trade security for money, and too many of these players, they want the security of getting the early contract, but they don't want to sacrifice any money. You can't have it both ways. It's one or the other. You know what I mean?
You sacrifice the arbitration years by having a longer-term deal.
Correct.
Meaning arbitration to arbitration on the table, you can't negotiate.
Yeah,
you don't have leverage.
And the player also loses their first 2 years of free agency by being locked into a lower deal contract. But, you know, if you're a pitcher like Matt Harvey, you think Matt Harvey would want to go back in time now and sign an 8-year, $100 million contract? Sure, but he wanted to hold out for the 8-year, $200 million contract.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now he might not get anything.
Because you get hurt or you struggle,
right,
and now your value dips.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar with the National Football League.
Go ahead, Marco. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. That reminds me, the way you explained that reminds me of Steve Smith with the Giants years ago.
Yeah. Bingo.
It's a good example.
Or Hakeem Nicks. Same deal.
Or Hakeem Nicks.
Yeah.
Really quick then. Richburg specifically, you guys had Sean O'Hara on a couple weeks ago, and I heard him say this, I wanted to ask you about it because other people on Twitter have mentioned this about Richburg. O'Hara said Richburg, the fit that he is in this offense, and I wanted to know, what is the center's role in this West Coast offense that makes Richburg or not makes Richburg a fit in the offense? Because does Brett Jones suit this offense more than Richburg does? Because I know Richburg's a good player, but I've heard people say that like Richburg will really be a good center or a Pro Bowl center once he is in a different type of offense. And what's your take on that?
Marco, it's a good question, and thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I don't know the answer to that. That's way like inside stuff that I don't have a great answer. I'm thinking maybe the running style, whether you're talking about power or zone. Richburg's not the biggest and most powerful guy, but neither is Brett Jones.
He's a smaller guy too.
So you know what? I'm gonna read. Let me. Hopefully, I'll remember. It's a great question, Marco. It's a great question. And next time I talk to Sean O'Hara, I'll ask him that, and I'll let you know what he says. Because I honestly don't know. And I'm willing to say that I don't know.
I mean, the only thing that I would throw out there, and this is just me guessing and interpreting, is, you know, Brett Jones being a smaller guy, a little bit more mobile in terms of moving after the snap.
I would think that's Richburg's strength, too,
correct.
Right?
I mean, I don't think that's something that Richburg struggled with. I'm just saying, if you really want to get into the minute details, perhaps that's something that comes to mind.
The other question,
real quickly, before we get back to the lines, John, I know that Marco briefly brought up Davis Webb, and he wasn't trying to make this point, but a lot of people question, why isn't Davis Webb active? We get that all the time. First of all, he's got to be active before you even want to speculate about him playing maybe late in the fourth quarter. Given all the injuries that this team has had, it's impossible. It's a luxury to dress three quarterbacks every single game. It's an extreme luxury for any NFL team to do that. When you have the amount of offensive linemen that you have out, John, when you have the amount of linebackers that you have out, if you're a coach and you're determining the seven players that you need to mark inactive, don't you think you need to take the extra offensive linemen and the linebackers over a third quarterback?
And by the way, if you look at those inactive lists over the past few weeks, almost every player on those lists except for Davis Webb are not healthy scratches. They're all injured players that are scratches.
I mean,
now, things might change now if guys start getting put on IR and things like that, or you get even more injured guys, and you're forced to make Davis Webb active because the injured guys can't actually play, so you might as well make him inactive for the game. So I think that is an interesting balancing act moving forward.
Yeah, the options, that's a big reason why you don't see a third-string quarterback. Yeah. He can't play another position, so you're limited.
Jason in Maine. How are you, Jason?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing well,
buddy. Jason.
Hi, just a couple things. I got to give a shout-out to Eli Manning. I've personally never seen a quarterback have more offensive line issues and lose his whole wide receiver squad. I've never heard him make excuses or point fingers or anything like that throughout his career here
He's
in New York. And I just hope he has a few more good years. I hope that, you know, guys can come back and get healthy. And I just wanted to give him credit for that. I wanted to give him a shout out for that. And just, I mean, how many guys go through the type of year he's had? I've just never seen it. Have you guys?
It's been rough, and you're right. He's handled it with a lot of class.
Well, and also his durability, too, given all those changes. I mean, I think that's just as impressive, his consecutive start streak. Before we let you continue, though, Jason, would you like to give a shout-out to Charlie or Dean or Bob?
No,
you
know, more
shout-outs. Well, I mean,
because
everybody's giving shout-outs. I just want to give you ample opportunity to do that.
Jason,
what's your second point,
Jason?
You know, the good thing about those guys, though, is they care, you know?
They absolutely do, no question. What's your second point, Jason?
Oh, the only other thing is, I wonder if you guys can update us on Jenkins, Fluker, and Justin Pugh. Do they have any chance to play this Sunday?
We'll see.
Pretty much all I have.
Obviously, there was an Adam Schefter report this morning about Jenkins. All Ben McAdoo has said was that he's in pain.
Yeah.
And it looked like he fought through that injury at the end of that game. As for Pugh, it's a back. It's tricky. He has had another week and a half off since that Thursday night game. So we'll see. Maybe he has a shot, but I also think, given he relapsed and re-aggravated,
they don't
want to
rush him
back
necessarily.
They'll probably want to be patient with him. I'm sure he wants to come back. Obviously, he's playing for a new contract this year, so I'm sure he wants to be back out there. And then Fluker was the other guy. He was in a boot. Last I saw him last week, I haven't seen him since last Wednesday, so we don't have updates yet. Ben McAdoo will talk for the first time tomorrow.
Yeah, the difference is with the Fluker injury that happened right in the KC game, and then you had the quick turnout. It was a toe injury, so not a surprise that he didn't play. Correct. So now it's a matter of, does he have enough time to regroup and get back out there? And then, I mean, just real quickly, Ben McAdoo said on the conference call that Curtis Grant suffered a knee injury. That did not look good. And then Dante Dion, a fracture. So,
fracture.
Correct. So they're going to have to determine what the next steps are. I'm sure there'll be probably some transactions in the days ahead.
Yeah, and then you figure Eli Apple is going to have to be active coming up if Jenkins' injury holds him out. We'll see. And if Dante Dion's out, we'll see.
If they have to make a move with a corner. I mean, you have Ross Cockrell, but you're right. You're limited in terms of the guys that know the system, at least.
We have seen corners in the past play with, like, a cast on their forearm with that type of injury. I don't know what the severity of it, if it's displaced, non-displaced surgery, or whatever the case might be, but corners have played with that injury before, but given
just
the circumstances of the season, I'm not sure if that's something that they're going to do. Steve in South Carolina, he's up next. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. Couple questions.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, what do you think is the more important evaluation for the rest of the year, the evaluation of Eric Flowers or the possible evaluation of Davis Webb? And my opinion on it is that, you know, if Davis Webb does go in and you decide to evaluate him, I don't know if it's going to be a fair evaluation on Flowers, being that because of mistakes the quarterback could make, it costs him sacks from the left side.
No, I mean, Steve, look, I think the way the coaches evaluate it, they'll understand when Flowers does something well or not. They don't just look at sack numbers and say, oh, he played poorly. They'll be able to evaluate Eric Flowers regardless of who's at quarterback. Now, if your other question is, I think the bigger and better point is that if you do throw Davis Webb in at maybe the ends of some of these games to see what he can do, you know, can you evaluate him if the Giants' offensive line is as banged up as it is now? And can you evaluate him with this receiver core as banged up as it is and guys not getting open? I think that's the better question. Do you evaluate Davis Webb well enough given what's around him? And we've seen how Eli Manning has been impacted by it. How is it going to impact a rookie that's never played in a regular NFL game before? I think that's the tougher question.
I understand that, but I think you guys were defending the move for Davis Webb earlier in the season because of the lack of, let's call starters that he has around him and being with all the injuries that we have. Well, let's face it, I think, you know, Roger Lewis is probably the only guy that's going to be back next year as far as the wide receivers that are starting right now.
Right.
So this trial period between Eli and these young guys, I think, is over. I think, you know, we've seen what we need to see out of them. You know, and let's see what different Davis Webb can offer than Eli rather than just who's better, who's not
yeah,
better.
But
what different can he bring to the table?
Yeah, but if you're going to do that once again, you're going to do that once again when games are getting out of hand. I still don't think even how this season is gone, it justifies bringing in Davis Webb to start a game number one or bring him in the second quarter. I mean, the goal is they still want to go out there and win football games. I understand, you know, the fans are thinking more in the draft, but I find it very difficult to believe that they're going to all of a sudden swing in a different direction in the remaining five games and want to give Davis Webb an opportunity in the first half. I'm all for if games get out of hand, you put him in the fourth. And I agree with John's point. It may be difficult to evaluate him, but you know what? I'd still be interested in evaluate his decision-making.
Oh, so
because you know what?
I'm
in your in your career, you're going to be put in positions where the offensive line has breakdowns. How do you run out of the pocket? How do you extend plays? You're going to deal with injuries to the wide receiver.
And by the way,
better to handle it now.
One of his hits coming out of school was his ability to handle pressure, too. So that's
so,
something you can
so
try
I'm
to
totally
judge.
Fine I'm with you. Seeing that, even though the talent around him may be banged up. But as far as game situation, I think they're still of the mindset they want to go out there the remaining five games. They want to try to win ball games. Eli Manning under center gives them the best chance to do that.
And I still believe, you know, that my second question about the defense is that, you know, I still believe we have a top five defense from a personnel standpoint, without a doubt. Now, out of frustration of this
Hard
year,
to say that this
do
year.
You see any players coming up and saying, you know, I want to trade. You know, I just you guys aren't getting it done for me. The offense can't you know, stay on the field. We're on the field, you know, 70, 80 plays a game. You know, I'd rather go somewhere else where I can have a better career.
Thank you, Safe. Appreciate the call. I don't. I mean, it's hard to predict anything like that, but I don't see it. And frankly, not to sound like a jerk, the defense has no right to point fingers at anybody the way they played this year.
Early in
they
the
don't.
Season, certainly struggled.
Hell, look where they're ranked.
Yeah.
The offense might be ranked higher than them in certain categories.
Well,
I'm dead serious.
No, I could say that with confidence based on where they are.
The defense can't be pointing fingers at anybody. Yeah, one game, this past game, where they put in bad spots and the offense didn't deliver, sure. But I can point to just as many games where the defense took games away from the offense, okay?
Well, and then the other thing I was going to throw out is, you know, the core of the defense was locked up with similar contracts
Correct.
Because they all came in. So you have to assess, even if you want to play this game of hypothetical like the last caller, what's the trade market look like, John, if you have guys with a few more years left on their contract?
At accelerated signing bonuses, the cap it you have to take
Are
to trade
teams
these guys,
gonna
all these
want to even think
things.
About talking about that and taking those on.
And can the Giants afford it? Because remember, if you trade a player, you owe them the prorated signing bonus. The new team doesn't pay that. So these guys that got these big signing bonuses, if you trade Snacks Harrison, you might still have to pay him $12 million. And again, not saying the Giants would ever do
no,
that.
No, but we're just talking about how
right.
it operates.
The Giants
the
would
finances.
Have to write Damon Harrison a check or whatever, take a $12 million cap hit. They wouldn't actually write him the check. They've written him that check already. But they'd have to take a $12 million cap hit, which is his accelerated signing bonus, just to trade him. So why in God's name would you go pay a 12 guy $12 million just to trade him? Doesn't make any sense.
It's affecting your cap, and he's not even on the roster anymore.
And again, those aren't actual numbers. Those are just random numbers that I'm throwing out there. Jay in Brooklyn will wrap us up. Hey, Jay.
All right, last but not least, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing well.
Jay.
All right, real quick, three quick things. Has Brett Jones outplayed Richburg in your eyes?
It's close.
Number two, are you giving Pugh, I know it's an off-season thing, are you giving Pugh more than $10 million a year?
Well, I think you got to evaluate his versatility.
That's tough, though.
I mean,
a lot of money.
I mean,
it is a lot of money.
But guys signed for in the offseason, and based on the comments he made on what guys made in the offseason, you can pretty much surmise what he's going to want.
I agree with that.
Well, and you don't even have to look at this offseason. I mean, look at previous offseasons. Look at what type of money veterans are getting on
Alessio,
the market.
Semele, all
yeah,
those guys.
I mean, you don't even need to speculate.
Jay, that
You've
is
seen
Jay.
It.
I think it's a great question. And I think that's going to be a very tough decision for the Giants front office to make because you hate to lose a player like that, but that's also a very big investment, especially for somebody who I don't think has ever played a full 16-game season, has dealt with injury problems in every year of his career. So I think that is a very, Very important question. It'll be a key one this offseason. I think it's a very, very tough one. I'm going to bail on you and take a rain check and talk to me in February.
The one thing, though, I'm going to add to the conversation that hasn't been mentioned is one of the things that they're going to have to think about is, even though Pugh has struggled to stay on the field, John, to your point, very few offensive linemen have been as reliable that they could plug him in a variety of different spots when they suffer injuries at other places.
And remember, you have to replace him. If he leaves, what money are you spending to replace him?
Correct. And what player could you come in maybe through the draft that you know can play left guard, can play left tackle, can play right tackle?
That's part of the problem, though. I mean, you have Eli, I love Eli, but let's face it, Eli's on the downside of his career. But his check is not showing he's on the downside of his career as far as what you're paying him. He's at the point where he needs a lot of help on the offense. How are you going to justify giving one guy who I think, and Pugh, who's a great guy, a great quote after a game, a guy who's always there for an interview,
and he's a leader.
I personally don't think is a difference maker, big-time money like that, when you need help everywhere else.
Well, and that goes back to
– $21 million.
And Jay, I think you bring up a really good point because you understand the financial repercussions of when you invest in a guy. That's why the draft is so important. And that's why, you know, for everybody calling in and saying quarterback, 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 I've thrown out, and this is just my personal opinion, even if you get a high pick, there's a lot of value in moving down and stockpiling other picks so that, to your point, Jay, you can address all of these other areas while still having a guy like Eli Manning on the books. You got
to
think about that.
I just wanted to bring that up. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon.
Good
you
stuff,
got it, Jay.
And by the way, people talk about the top five pick. I'll just run it through here. There's no guarantee if you're picking a top five pick, you're getting a great player. Just saying. I'm going to go back to 2012 really quickly on the draft, folks. Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin, Trent Richardson, Matt Khalil, Justin Blackmon. One difference-making player out of five.
Well, and two guys are only in the NFL right now, by the way. Three of the five you mentioned, they're not even playing anymore.
Correct.
And RG3, they made the trade up, remember, terms of that move.
2013, Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Deion Jordan, Lane Johnson, Ezekiel Ansah. The fourth and fifth picks were much better than the top three picks. Lane Johnson and Ezekiel Ansah, both Pro Bowl level, I would say, players. The other three, not so much.
And the two of the top three picks, Luke Jokel and Deion Jordan, are not even on their existing drafted teams.
And neither guy is playing. Actually, I think Jokel is playing left tackle now, right?
But yes, Jokel is.
Fisher
with
is not.
Seattle, yeah. He was
next
banged
year,
up, though, had knee surgery.
Jadeveon Clowney, good pick, but injury issues. Greg Robinson, two. Bleh. Blake Bortles, three. Not so good. Sammy Watkins, four. A lot of injuries. And then Khalil Mack, number five. So, again, you're not even looking at a fit from the one I'm looking at here, 50% hit rate, Lance. You go to 2015, which was a strong draft. You had Winston at one, Mariota at two. And, by the way, neither one of those two guys have sold me that they're, like, you know, a top five level quarterback either, in the league, I mean. They're both improving. They're good players, not great. Dante Fowler's good, not great. Amari Cooper's taken a huge step back this year. And then Brandon Scherff's a guard. He's a guard.
Still a Pro Bowler, though.
He is. He's a really good player, but he's a guard. All right? Let's go to 2016. All right? You got Jared Goff, one.
Two quarterbacks again.
Looking better this year. We'll see.
Goff, absolutely.
Carson
yeah.
Wentz, looking very good, obviously. Joey Bosa, Ezekiel Elliott, and Jalen Ramsey. That's a home run
early
top five.
Early returns are really good.
And then the final five from last year, which obviously the jury's still out on.
Yeah, very
guys.
Hard
very
to evaluate.
Early. Myles Garrett, Trubisky, Solomon Thomas, Levin Fournette, and Corey Davis. So, you know, Corey Davis injuries, Trubisky slow
start.
I'd say
four of the five have shown some flashes.
But the bottom line is you're looking at about a 50% hit rate here.
Nothing
on
guaranteed.
Your top five picks the last 5 years. 50%. Some of the guys are out of the league. Out of the league.
And not that far removed from the draft out of the league.
Correct. So just something to keep in mind. People get obsessed about draft picks. Guys, it's because you're a top three, top five pick, there's no guarantee of anything in this league, okay? Thanks for joining us. We went long. Dave's upset because he wants to go and eat. For Lance Meadow. Oh, he ate
already.
Survive. He's okay. I'm sorry.
He'll survive.
For Lance Meadow, I'm Judge Folk. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. We got Russ and Deal, and then we'll see you down the road. Everybody, thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend. Have a good week, rather.
Yes.
And we'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Take care.
Have a good one.